What's up, everybody? Welcome to Advice Not Taken with Jamie Hilstein. That's me. Today we have a very special show. Dr. Drew is here, everybody. I grew up watching Dr. Drew. I have become friends with Dr. Drew. I just did his podcast, Dr. Drew After Dark, and we decided to do this podcast. So I'm on my way to Los Angeles to do Adam Carolla's show for the first time, which I'm doing because of Dr. Drew. So I'm doing Adam Carolla's show for the first time. A lot of you are probably listening because you heard me on Adam Carolla's show. I don't know how that went. It could have been a fucking disaster. I hope it was good, but who knows? My life is a weird life. For all I know, I was too much for Adam Carolla. When this airs, I could have been canceled by Adam Carolla, who is not a fan of cancel culture. But that's my brain catastrophizing. Ooh, I should actually add catastrophizing to Dr. Drew. I'm adding that right now. You guys, you just heard how catastrophe, I don't know how to fucking spell that. Whatever, I'll figure it out. You just heard how this is how the show happens. This is what the show is. The show, it's a mental health comedy podcast. Sometimes we talk about politics and culture stuff. I mean, we do, right? Because that ties into mental health, especially when it comes to tribalism and how we deal with politics on social media or with people who disagree with us. But a lot of it is we're all trying to get better together. I am not speaking from some fucking high horse. I am not a self-help guru who has, you know, millions of dollars from his best-selling books and just tells you guys to go to fucking Peru to take plant medicine. And you're just like, I can't afford breakfast. And that's what the show is. And the show is I'm dealing with a lot of my bullshit and I'm trying to be the best person that I can be. And you guys are dealing with your bullshit and you're trying to be the best people you can be. And we're all doing that together, and that's cool, right? So that's what this podcast is. If you want to help the podcast, you can rate and review it. You can go to iTunes and Spotify, give it 5 stars. You don't even have to write anything deep. Some of you are like, this show saved my life. You literally just write, me likey, and that will make me laugh, and that makes me happy, and that helps the stupid fucking algorithm. So you can do that. If you are listening, I am putting this on my old feed. If you're listening on my old feed, hello, I miss you guys. Come on over. A lot of you haven't come on over to the new feed, which is just you can look up Advice Not Taken on Spotify or iTunes. If you want to help the show financially, we could use as much help as possible. I want to do more stuff for you guys. I do bonus episodes over there. You can join the Patreon, patreon.com/Jamie Hilstein for as little as $5 a month. Think about the dumb shit that you buy for $5. Is a pack of cigarettes? I feel like that's like $12 now. I don't know. You buy some stupid fucking drink at Starbucks that's just filled with sugar and it buries your emotions a little further and then you get sadder later and then you just go buy another one. Don't do that. Instead, support an artist you like. Support someone who's brought you value. Patreon.com/Jamie Hilstein. If you want to be featured on the show, or you just want to support the show for free, go to your app store right now and download the app Logcast, L-O-G-C-A-S-T. This episode is brought to you by Logcast. Logcast is a great new app where you can use your voice like me. I write like a dum-dum. Sometimes I've written emails or text messages, and because of like my dyslexia and just being in general slow, in the 90s they called it a word we can't say anymore, I've gotten into fights with friends because they've like misread, like my tone or something. And but people on this podcast, guys, people who work on this podcast, people who are listening right now, I don't know if they're listening, they're forced to listen when they're in the studio, but people who are listening to this podcast right now, we have gotten into fights because I email poorly. And then I like get on the phone or voice memo them and they're like, oh, you're nice. And I'm like, yeah, I know, I'm just dumb. Anyway, Logcast, you can talk to your favorite creators like this with your voice. And if you leave, if you join the Jamie Kilstein circle or the Advice Not Taken circle, you can leave a voice memo and we'll feature you on the show like days of old, like radio. So that's it, guys. You can check out my Adam Carolla episode, which should be up now, I think. We're recording it today. I hope you guys like this episode with Dr. Drew. I'm so fucking excited about it. We have Duncan Trussell still going to come on the show. We're going to start doing more Zoom interviews, but from studio. So I'll have access to like all of my like crazy ass network. So we'll be getting some more big comedians on here and political people, and it'll be really cool. So please stick around if you like the show. Tell people about the show. I think that it, Madeline's going to come back on and co-host some. You guys really like that. So we'll be reading some more erotic books. I didn't know how to say it. I was going to say erotic fan fiction, but it's not fan fiction. It's like erotic fiction, I guess. Anyway, I love you guys. If you have a question for the show, you can write into jamiekilsteinpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow me on social media at the Jamie Kilstein on Instagram, at Jamie Kilstein on Twitter. Yeah, follow me, tell your friends. I'm still shadow banned on Instagram, so it's very helpful if you like and comment and retweet or repost my shit. It's a real bummer, dude. I'm literally just trying to talk about mental health, and they're like, there are some people who follow you who have questionable thoughts about the vaccine. And I'm like, but I got the vaccine and I just want to make jokes. Please, why are you shadow banning me? Anyway, if I know anyone at Instagram, jamiekilsteinpodcast@gmail.com, we got to take this down from the inside. Anyway, love you guys, and we'll see you next week. Enjoy Dr. Drew. Follow Dr. Drew. Listen to Dr. Drew After Dark. You guys, he has millions of followers. I almost forgot to promote him because I'm like, does he need it? But I'm going to be nice. Go follow Dr. Drew. He's a good man. Anyway, love you guys. Aloha, y'all. See you next week. Peace. Thanks for doing the show, buddy.
Of course, man. Good to see you.
Good to see you, too. I got to say, I kind of want to turn this into the first question. We're already friends and you've already helped me, so this is not an ass kissing thing. This is just a legitimately, it's what I've told people about you who have asked about you since I did your show, which is you're so nice. And I mean, we DM'd after I did your podcast and I had a blast on your podcast. I saw Duncan Trussell in the parking lot. He was raving about you. And you said something that I needed to hear just about like me as a man, just randomly, because I think you probably knew I needed to hear it. And then you helped me. I mean, I'm doing Adam Carolla's show for the first time. That's because of you. You're doing my podcast, which like you weren't like, let me see the numbers. For someone who has been in the industry, which can be so cutthroat and can be so competitive and can be so kind of, you know, someone else gets a success, and instead of your first reaction being like, oh, good for that guy, you're like, fuck that guy, or why didn't I get that? How did you stay? How did you stay nice?
I first of all, I get criticized for being too nice, and so there's that.
So is this what is called me being an enabler? Is that what this first question is?
Yeah, you're enabling me, exactly. My wife may get pissed at you, I think that life is too short. I love people. I'm fascinated by people. I it's not hard not to mistreat people. You know what I mean? To me, that's right. Pretty easy. And I do all this because I'm trying to do something good. I'm trying to make a difference. I'm not doing this stuff because, hey man, it's me, you know, which right. is very unsatisfying to me. I'm doing it because I hope to have a positive impact on people. And that includes the people that come in and I talk to, you know, it's
do you pretty think-
simple. And by the way, the other thing is I had, you know, 30 years of working my fucking ass off too. And when you have 30 years of really hard work, I mean, really excruciatingly hard work, and you can then do something else with your knowledge base and career. You're so grateful. I'm so grateful to have that. So,
okay. So this kind of ties into, I mean, sort of why you complimented me, except instead of me becoming a nice person, I mean, I would like to think I was always nice, but instead of me becoming a much better person because I was a successful doctor and well off, or what, I rock bottomed. And I think that what you just described in a weird way is the far less painful route, but it both things, rock bottoming and what you went through, lead to the same thing, which is I want to lead a life that is kind and helping people. I've learn from my mistakes, but most importantly, I'm grateful for what I get to do now.
Yeah. I'm in the exact same place. And however we get here, you're grateful to be here. You know what I mean?
Right. I wish I could have had your career and not cheated on my wife. That would have been cool. But here we are.
Done that, but your road was your road, and here you are.
Right. But do you also think that when you said not me, like it's not about me, I mean, that could be it, man. That could be the fact that you weren't, you know, I dropped out of high school to be an entertainer. Mm. And as nice as you are, or as enlightened as you think you are, there is something when you're showing up every night and grabbing a microphone to a room full of strangers that as humble as you think you're being.
Yeah.
You're still like, look at me, look at me, where you started trying to help people. And then ended up where you are.
But maybe there's an adjustment. I do believe that people that perform are helping people. I mean, you're at least getting us out of our head for a minute, or entertaining us, or making us laugh, or having a communal experience, sharing something. And I think the critical ingredient in it not being just about you is the development and practice of a skill. And comedy is certainly a skill. I mean, you got and you may be motivated because you saw somebody else kill and goddamn, fuck that guy, I'm going to do better than him, whatever it is. And I know you guys are very competitive with each other, but it's still a skill. It's like playing the cello or something. It's a crazy skill.
Yeah, no. And I've noticed that. I've noticed that the more I make it about the work, the easier it is to go to the clubs and still feel like a good person. Like when and we'll talk about this later, but I've taken hookups completely off the table. So there's no like lingering by the door waiting for a cute girl to say good job so I could tell her to follow me on Instagram. There's none of that. I'm drinking very little. I'm not trying to party. I don't need to network. I'm already friends with everyone in Austin. When I go on the road, there's usually just two other comics. And I've noticed that the shows where I show up with headphones to listen to last night's set and a notebook and legitimately treat it like an artist. Cause I'm sure you've experienced this. A lot of people, especially new, and I've fallen into this, they kind of feel like a key ingredient to being an artist is suffering. And you know, I'm a writer, so I'm gonna drink like Hemingway. And you're like, well, what have you written? And they're like, or for me, anytime I'm mentally healthy, I'm waking up early to go to jujitsu and I'm going to church and doing all these things, I literally have to ask myself, am I funny? Whereas if I got drunk and hooked up with some girl, I'd be like, yeah, that's the life of the road. And like we romanticize these unhealthy habits.
Yes. So some of that, whenever it's been researched, it's usually around substance use.
Yeah.
You know, artists think they do better when they're high or something. And the research every time shows that they don't.
Really?
They just don't every time. They think they produce something better. And then they objectively evaluate it, like have a panel that evaluate it. They're like, this is shit. Why did that guy write that?
Dude, I've been doing comedy for 20 years. And the fact that I've never heard that, I'm like, the comedy industrial complex has buried that fact. He has hidden that from all the comics.
To be fair, I mean, it's one thing to be taking, you know, having a drink when you go up on stage because it loosens you up a little bit. But if you're getting wasted or if you're getting super high, you're not in your right mind and you're not going to perform. So I don't care what your performance instrument is. It's going to be adulterated.
Yes.
And everything I've seen has been sort of measured up to objective scrutiny. But so you're really talking about the tortured artist, right? Mm-hmm. And the tortured artist is really about really childhood trauma.
Yeah.
You know, what happened early and what's motivating you to be an artist and to need to express yourself.
Yeah. I was like, that's also what made me funny.
And it may be funny. And it certainly, you know, a lot of humor comes out of tragedy. And you know, one of the reasons Christina P wanted me to do the After Dark show was to kind of dig into comedians and sort of show the dark underbelly. Everybody has trauma. Everybody has addiction. It's always there. It's like, it gets boring pretty quickly.
Yeah.
But it's really what that does to you in terms of your humanity and your desire to do better and to drive and to discipline yourself and all that stuff. I mean, Hemingway, I'm sure, was a tortured person, but I'm also sure he had a fucking great time most of the time.
Right.
You know what I mean? I'm sure he was not torturing himself going to bullfights and drinking. He was alcoholic. That's what he did.
Yeah.
But he also had a lot of shit he was carrying with him. And that wasn't because of the artist's life. That's because of how he grew up.
Right. What you just said was so fascinating because, so I always joke, and I've said it in interviews, I think our episode, we probably talked about it, our episode of your show was called like Trauma Bonding or something.
Yeah, it was.
Which at first, by the way, the first time I heard about trauma bonding, I thought it was like a good thing. That's how fucked up I am. I'm like, well, yeah, it means I'm being vulnerable with girls.
Well, no. Trauma bonding, like, you know, I went out in the desert and did that Special Forces thing, and that whole cast and I, we are trauma bonded.
Right.
And it's an interesting
thing. That's great. Yeah.
Very deep. But bonding around trauma, right. You know, that's a different thing.
We're definitely going to circle back to that. But on this art thing that you just said, okay, so if you want to get good at guitar, biggest thing you got to do, you got to practice, right?
Yeah.
You got to practice scales, putting melodies together, chords, writing songs, improvising, all that. So practice is the thing that makes you good at guitar. I would always say, jokingly, but also I meant it, that the thing that made me good at comedy, it wasn't that I loved stand-up. It was my first memories of making jokes were when really like hard, tragic things were happening. And those jokes made me and my brothers laugh or me and my friends laugh. And that was the first moment you go, okay, there's a real power here. And I think most comedians, you know, if you see a comedian who's just like hot and like grew up super wealthy, I'm like, I'm suspect already if you're gonna be funny. And so...
Are you thinking about somebody in particular?
I mean, now I am, yeah. And so, I mean, there are many to choose from. Everyone has already figured it out. So the problem is when we start to get healthy, if that is the thing that made us good, just like practice is what can make you good with guitar, there is part of us when we start to get healthier, when we're in a great relationship, or more importantly for me, when things are kind of going rough and I'm like, oh, I can write about this. I think that's where the fear comes in of taking that away.
Because
if that's the thing that built us.
You're right. And I would say the problem, the conundrum of emotional change and growth is you have to be willing to become whatever you're supposed to be. Right. You can't put limits on it or, you know, preconceive what it's going to be. You have to grow into whatever it is. And the thing that people have difficulty with, the brain is configured in such a way that it doesn't like change. It experiences emotional change the way it experiences like physical change, like your body's being torn apart. And you have grief when you leave an old self behind and grow into something new. It's an intense grief sometimes. And so the fear is that I'm going to be something else, but I'm sure that does happen that sometimes somebody decides, shit, what have I been doing with this? I've got some, but that ends up being a good thing. It ends up being, and that doesn't happen very often.
Yeah.
Because the reason that doesn't happen very often is that the shit that's in you kind of stays in you. It just doesn't bother you as much. It doesn't create as much pathology. If that makes sense. So like for me, I had a bunch of shitty stuff in my growing up from my mother and whatever, and my dad wasn't great, and I had a bad anxiety disorder, and I was in therapy for a decade, and at the end of it, my anxiety was gone, and all the shit that I was holding, resentments and feelings about, and all that, they're still there, but they doesn't affect me the same way, and I'm still doing all the same things that I've always done in terms of who I am and what I'm doing in my career and stuff. It just had more freedom to kind of follow things around.
That's so important for people to hear you saying that. One, because I think a lot of people would hear someone in your position or their therapist or whatever and think that, you know, those people have it put together. All the therapists I know are fucking completely out of their mind.
And if they often are. And if they're not having had done their own work, they're dangerous. You have to have really done your own work. I mean, it made me a much more effective therapeutic instrument, boy, for my patient, those.
Oh, for sure. And then, you know, I think the other thing that you said that was really great for people to hear is that it doesn't necessarily go away. because
it really rarely goes away completely. You know what I mean? It's because that's your history and it's in your structure of your brain and it's in your memories. And it was shitty oftentimes. It was super shitty.
Yep.
But it doesn't have the same control over you. It doesn't impact you the same way.
And a lot of the times that I've gotten like badly depressed, maybe not to like suicidal ideation, but like the times it's gotten really bad. I mean, maybe it actually has been part of when it has gotten there is at the very least, it's the most frustrating that I'm sure people listening go through. It's when you think you're doing all the things right. And then that old thing kicks in. I'm getting anxiety over nothing. Something external. I got dumped again. I lost this job again. And you just go, what the fuck, man? I'm doing all the things now. Like, I'm being kind. I'm working on this. I'm going to therapy. And this bullshit's still going to happen. And there's this moment where if you don't think the way you just thought, if you think like, well, I remember after COVID is when I really started reading like personal development books and I started meditating. And it was the first time I was single because God and COVID forced me to not be codependent because we literally had to be in quarantine. Mm-hmm. And so when I moved to Austin after lockdown, I remember being like, okay, it's been a year. You know, you hear all these stories of people being like, yeah, I just took a year off dating. And then I met my wife and I was like, I moved to Austin right away, met a girl at a diner, not even on like a dating site. It was like a meet cute, as the kids say. And within 3 days, I realized she was all of my red flags again. There were all these things I missed. And I remember being so mad. Looking back, it's so silly though, because I was like, I literally got in this relationship and I was like, but I meditate now. I should now meet the perfect girl. Well, and I got so depressed, but it was. Okay.
So it's another example of how things are still the same, right?
Still the same. Exactly. Exactly.
Which is that like the same kind of person, because of the way you're constructed,
right?
The same kind of person is always going to be attractive to you.
Right.
It just is.
Right.
Now with good treatment, the intensity of that goes down. And you sort of broaden out to be attracted to broader range of people.
Yeah.
So you can get some of that same stuff, but light, and still be attracted to that person, right?
Yeah. Well, and also to make it not just about my shitty dating life, but to make it more relatable to everybody. It's also when you're working on something, I think knowing what you said, knowing that it's still there, but we're getting better. Being aware of the progress you're making, because I remember my brother told me, I was like, oh man, I had to break it off with this girl. I thought it was all these things. And he goes, dude, the old version of you would have moved in with her in a month.
Right.
And he's right. Because I used to move in with those.
Progress, guys. Not perfection. Progress, not perfection.
Yeah. And I think,
I think I mentioned like Sex and Love Addicts to you last time we talked. Yeah,
you didn't, but you certainly are now.
Got to that, and I'm there again. It's occurring to me again. And that will change you a lot, because it not only does it, you know, you'll constantly get feedback and it'll change the wiring a little bit. So some of that stuff that's exciting won't be so exciting.
Okay.
But also new things will also be appealing to you, and you will be able to, much like, you know, if you're an alcoholic, alcohol is always going to be good to you. It's always going to look good to you. You'll be able to not do that and make different choices.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Because that's actually very, very helpful, because I mean, even the last 6 months, I'd go on dates and when I saw, like, I wouldn't kiss a girl if I saw it. Like, I'm getting much better at spotting it, at saying no. I think those meetings will probably make me feel less crazy. I'll tell you though, I went to a couple Al-Anon meetings in LA.
And
I let, because part of me was like, maybe I'm an alcoholic. I drink like two drinks at a show, but I have an addiction in my family. So I'm very like, I have an addictive personality. I think the only reason I'm not an alcoholic, I hate being drunk. I hate being completely out of control. Like, legitimately, I hate it. And so I went to an AA meeting. Like, all my friends there were just like, dude, you're not. You're fine. And then but then a couple of them sent me like an Al-Anon, you know, the test you take or whatever. I've never done so well on a test. Like Alan, I was like, I got everything. It was all me. And I went to a couple meetings, and tell me if this is a normal thing that happens. I felt worse. I felt so much worse. I felt like more broken. I felt like I was just only reliving the bad things that happened in my life instead of coming up with solutions to move forward. I felt maybe just the meetings I went to were rough because the people who volunteered to be sponsors, they were the ones who were having like the biggest fucking meltdowns in the place. And I was like, I don't know if I want to bring these people into my life, especially being fucking codependent.
Yeah, be very careful about who you select. But I've always said, I've told people that if you come out of a therapist office feeling great, like walking on air,
yeah,
get a new therapist because that's not what therapy is about.
Is it kind of like going to the gym where you should be like sore and sort of a little worked out, but the
sometimes you can feel like you're just completely destroyed or falling apart. I mean, the therapist's job is not to make you feel good.
Right.
And same thing with Alan. The job is to confront what's up and really regulate it, manage it, look at it. And it doesn't, you know, if it were easy and look great, you'd do it yourself.
Right.
But it doesn't. We can't do it ourselves. We need somebody to reflect back to us. And then we're forced to do it. And then we don't like it.
Right. So what would you say to the people? I think people's biggest complaint, and the answer could just be shitty therapists, is they go, okay, I agree with that. Because I agree with that. If I'm going to pay someone, I think a lot of people go to therapy just to be heard. And, you know, they vent their problems the same way to their therapist that they would their friends. And they
worse than that. They want some sort of magic. You know, I go see a guru instead because that guy gives me solutions. Like, no,
right.
Your therapist should shut the F up. And the therapist's job is to be an antenna that their body receives what you're feeling, metabolizes it, and sends it back in a new form that you can go back and forth with them on an unconscious level as you talk and reflect about things. The therapist body is receiving what's going on in your body brain and sort of reflecting it back to you with signals on his or her face.
Yeah, because I think...
Not words.
That's so a much. Great way to put it. And that's certainly not what I have looked for, because I think a lot of the more personal development type people, they're all about moving forward, which is always how I felt. I'm like, I want to learn from the past, right? I want to know, okay, I do this in relationships because
of
this with my mom.
Not a cognitive process. This is not... Now, there are cognitive behavioral therapies, right? But the stuff you and I have been talking about is not cognitive. It's right. On an emotional level. So it's nonverbal, non-rational, not anything to do with planning or problem solving necessarily. Right. It's about building a rapport and closeness with another person. As you get deeper connection with your own feelings that you become increasingly able to express fully. I'm feeling whatever I'm feeling, and the feelings are what come into the room and the therapist receives, not my thinking. Your thinking is the problem. Your thinking is always responding to whatever is going on in your body. And the thinking, I mean, there may be, you know, psychoeducation can be helpful and can straighten some things out and stuff, but that's not the work. The work is a microsurgery of the system.
That's really cool.
Not change your insights you might have different insights, but you literally grow into a different place. You're actually a different person in a different place looking back at who you were.
Wow.
And that's not anything to do with moving forward. I don't know what that's whatever it is as people grow.
That's cool. I've never heard therapy described that way. That's awesome. Because I think a lot of people think it's just reliving the bad shit that happened to you, and the therapist never wants you to get better because then you'll stop coming and paying.
No, in fact, a good therapist will not have you relive or revivify trauma. They will have you talk about what the trauma is doing to you in this moment. Rewire what the trauma has left behind.
I have been to bad therapists. Okay.
The therapist may need that history to kind of sort everything out.
Of course.
But you know, I mean, when I'm doing groups and stuff, you know, I always ask those kinds of questions. Like, hey, this happened to you. And then that, to me, I'm doing that in order to create rapport in the group, because inevitably, whatever's happened to one person, let's say the group's got 10 people in it, at least five other people have had the exact same thing.
Right.
Each one thinking, I'm the only person in the world that's had this experience. And so just that opens people up. So that's why I get into that material.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's why our podcasts help people, right? Yeah. Is they just, you feel crazy for so long and then you hear someone you like be like, oh yeah, that happened to me yesterday. And they're like, oh, okay. I mean, even when you were like, I had problems in childhood, I was like, oh, thank God. Yeah. You know what I mean? So I wasn't going to ask you about this, but because we did bring up this sex and love, you're either going to think this is a great idea or you are going to stop me dead in my fucking tracks.
I can't wait. This should be good.
I almost want you to guess. Okay. So I took hookups off the table. That's been for a while. That's probably been about like 6 months. It's probably been about 6 months. There is part of me, and part of it is the church stuff. But that I kind of want to just be celibate for at least a year and definitely, I don't know if I'm waiting until marriage, but definitely wait until I'm in a relationship.
Okay. So let me just stop you and support you, because it's not a bad idea.
Okay.
It's not a bad idea, but it has to be done properly.
This is
or it's just flip side of the same coin.
Exactly.
You're being what's called bipolar. You're hypersexual, you're anorectic.
Yes.
Hypersexual, anorectic sexual. That's the same thing.
Yes.
So
and then my fear is that when I do cave, instead of it being with, you know, like I have girlfriends who were still really close. We could have sex whenever. I'm afraid that instead of doing it with them or someone nice, I'll just be so pent up that I'll just have like the worst kind of sex.
Somewhere. Correct. You'll go one, you'll flip one way and then flip the other way. You just keep flip-flopping. That's no good.
Okay.
So that's why I've been saying, you know, SLA and things like that. And free and they're good. And you will do something called a circle plan. I think that's an SLA. At least SA does one. And you do things that are enriching and good. You put down in the circle things that are slippery and you want to avoid.
Okay.
And the inner circle, you put things you're not going to do under any circumstances.
Okay.
And in the inner circle, if you're working with a sponsor, so it's not your brain making these decisions, much like if you're an addict, I wouldn't want you to be making decisions.
Right.
It's kind of the same thing in sex and love addiction. You want somebody reflecting back on you how to build these practices. You want somebody who's done a circle plan themselves and kind of have a sense of how it works. I mean, at the beginning, you would put sex and porn and things like that in the computer and the phone in the center.
Yeah.
But you might be able to move some of that out into the careful zone, the middle zone, under, you know, where you really watch yourself, document how you react to things, pay attention to what you're feeling as these things get brought back. And so it's done in a graduated fashion, right?
That's cool.
And maybe in the middle plan, you know, after a few months, it includes going out and having coffee with people and figuring out what that feels like to just have a relationship with there's no possibility of something coming, you know, you're going to keep still the other stuff in the middle of the circle that you don't do and have the support of your peers to do that.
And I mean, I gotta be honest, it's funny. The only reason I haven't gone to those meetings is I'm just like, I'm going to fall in love with my sponsor. Like, that's just the way
that's okay. It'll be a male. First of all, it's going to be a male.
Perfect. I will change my sexuality and I will fall in love with a male sponsor.
That's hysterical.
Doctor, the next time you come back on the podcast is me and my husband co-hosting.
It's fantastic.
The thing is, the last 6 months, it's not like I've been white knuckling it. And I know they talk about white knuckling it in AA. Been the best. Like, it's been great.
What have I said to you more than once so far today? Progress, not perfection.
Progress. I mean, pretty much I'm asking you.
But on your own, it's only going to go so far.
No, you're right. And you're totally right about those.
Get a therapist that deals with this stuff. And work with her.
You're right about those extremes, too. I think people battling any kind of, you know, if I try to eat so restrictively healthy, then when I go off, I go fucking crazy. You know, food and sex are actually far more problematic. I mean, food actually is probably more than any of it. And I'll just go nuts. It's not like, all right, I'm going to treat myself to like a burrito. I go, well, I had this. I went to two different drive-thrus on my way home last night after being like almost like completely keto for the week. And that back and forth is brutal. And the last thing I would want is, you know, I'm doing the sex thing for so many good reasons. Mm-hmm. Not even because I'm like, I have a problem or I'm hurting people. Literally just because I'm like, I just want to be the best version of myself. And yeah, this says, sure. And I've fallen into these traps before. And so the last thing I would want is suddenly I'm just so fucking horny that it's just like, yeah, I do totally go back and just have some stupid hookup. And
have you ever had an eating disorder, do you think?
But guys don't call it that. Guys are just like, they call it, I got food stuff.
So the typical triad in a female would be food, sex or sex and love.
Yeah.
And then cutting. That's a thing we see a lot of. Now I'm wondering if your tattoos were ever sort of a version.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. I was going to say, maybe you'll see me and my lesbian wife when we co-host instead of my husband. No, I mean the tattoos I just thought were cool. To be honest, I hated the pain part. Every time I started to get a tattoo, I'm like, this is a terrible idea. There's been no part of me that ever liked. I mean, this one, I didn't even finish. This is one of the best artists in the world gave me this tattoo. The inner arm is one of the most shockingly painful parts. And he just goes, all right, man, we just got to finish that part. And I go, oh, you know what, bro? It looks really good. Like, I like the empty space here. Yeah, baby. But does make sense that I,
and again, it all kind of goes together, all this stuff kind of goes, it's all trauma stuff, you know. Yeah. It's all there. It's all, you know, you're trying to regulate things that aren't regulated well. Yeah. Internally.
I was like, I don't cut, I do listen to Fall Out Boy and other bands. So I feel like that still puts me into the young girl category.
Well, no, I brought up women not because I'm comparing to women. I'm just saying it's more, they're acting out as a little more typical. It's like,
yeah,
it's like,
that's interesting, because you're right, I've never been like, get drunk and fight a guy. Yeah, I've always been, yeah, eat too much and try not to text my ex, like, yeah. That is more of the line I go, you know. I'd love your take on this. What's your because I had this amazing jiu-jitsu world champion female on here, and she was talking to me about the masculine feminine dynamic, and she was always attracting very feminine guys because as a professional fighter, and she's like a business owner, she's been very masculine, and I've always attracted masculine women because, you know, they're brassy and they're funny and they're artists, and I've never had, I don't know if I've ever had a girlfriend cook a meal for me or like be under or be shorter than me even. Right. What do you consider, because there's a lot of talk, you know, with modern feminism, but also the toxic masculinity, but also with like legit gross toxic masculinity, like the rise of sort of the Andrew Tate type people. What is your take on a healthy, not just masculine feminine dynamic in a relationship, but like, For the men listening, where, you know, I always loved my feminine traits because I'm like, dude, I'm vulnerable. I'm in touch with my feelings. Like, I can talk about sex openly. Like, these are good things. But I do wonder if, you know, I also feel like it wasn't until I moved to Texas that I started having male role models and really try to get in touch with the masculine part. And I think that might have gotten me in trouble in past relationships. So what is sort of the balance on an individual level? And
let's try to dissect what you just said. Yeah. First, you said, why do I attract more masculinity women? Is that right?
Sure. Yeah. That's part of it.
Is that more because they're sort of sexually sort of forward?
Oh, maybe. Cause I definitely don't like making first moves. Right.
So sexually forward, good. Makes it fun, easy, different, you know, a certain thing, but it's also takes away tenderness and closeness and intimacy. Yes. Another thing, and that's usually what people are afraid of, right?
Fuck. So you're right. Well, no. I want that more than anything, but I just realized like that's what I was denied in my childhood.
I know every sex, and I'm not saying you're a sex addict, but every sex addict I know always goes like, just want to have a real relationship. Everyone I know says the
same. Yeah,
but you know, to one degree or another, all this SLA stuff is sort of an intimacy disorder of some type or another.
Yeah.
And it's kind of complicated what every individual's relationship with that is.
Right.
But it's always about it feeling uncomfortable or scary, or you want to run away from it, or whatever it is, or just not appealing or not sexual. You're like, you can't be sexual with the person that is feminine and tender to you. It just doesn't seem good to you.
Right.
Whatever. It's, everybody has their own kind of version of that. So it's something for you. And that's, again, what you would work on. And that's why, remember I said, that's why I was saying you left your own devices, you'll flip and flop. But right. doing a program or working with a therapist, you'll slowly engage in more kind of tenderness kinds of interaction without sexuality and without judgment, and just sort of build that capacity. Does that make sense?
Right. Yeah, yeah, no, that makes sense. I mean,
and you'll build that with a therapist if you have a female therapist, which I think is what you need.
Yeah, no, my best experiences with therapists have been with female therapists.
Yeah, yeah.
They've been great.
And again, you made progress. Stop beating yourself up. You know, you're doing good.
Well, that's another thing that I need to work on.
Right. And now back to how, what's optimum maleness and femaleness? What are you saying?
Yeah. So like,
I understand that there's a lot of fluidity going on these
days. A lot of fluidity going on. And so with no offense to anybody, is there something to the very, you know, the old school, what would seem almost problematic relationship dynamics of someone being very feminine and bringing the good qualities and, you know, to the table, and someone playing the masculine role?
Right.
Instead of sort of like, yeah, there are a lot of women trying to be more masculine, or who just naturally are males who are trying to like get rid of a lot of those masculine tendencies. So that's what I've done, at least.
Right. And so many masculine tendencies, so-called, are really just, you know, a description of shittiness. You know what I mean? A guy being an asshole. It's like, you should not be an asshole.
I just fucking punch a wall when I get mad because I'm a dude.
Right. You should not be an asshole.
Yeah.
But my hope is that all this fluidity and expanded expression and stuff, I'm worried about people that don't have a stable sense of whatever that is. Because, you know, in my world,
yes,
it was always about making a stable, cohesive self identity. Now, that identity can be, you know, these days, it can be very expressed in a lot of different gender sort of situations. But when people are changing and moving all the time, I worry about that. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm saying I worry about that. Because what I hope for people is that we just expand what people genuinely are, that they're able to, because being who you are, being genuinely you, is the work. And then find somebody else who's also genuine that fits with those qualities in you.
Right.
That is, there's a fittedness there. And oftentimes, not always, oftentimes there is a Taoist kind of quality to it. There's sort of there's people that are alike, we like people that are like us to a point.
Yes.
Is it too much like us and we don't like it? It drives us crazy.
I've always that's been another thing that I think a lot of people do. It's like, okay, we like all the same things. We, you know, we have the same sense of humor. So like, this has got to be it. But you're not at all thinking about what you're both bringing to the table in a relationship to
I
build.
Think it's more about, it's more about strengths and weaknesses and emotional sort of landscapes, because liking the same restaurants and liking the same movies and liking the same culture and museums and humor and all that is good. That does sound great, because you get to kind of see the world together in the same way, enjoy things the same way, and so you're not having that problem of I want to go to the whatever, the, you know, the art museums. I hate the art museum. I don't want to go. That's you know, who wants to do it?
Punch the wall again.
Yeah. Right. But that's very different than I'm a quiet person and I'm a loud person. I'm a cold person. I'm a warm person. Those sorts of personality characteristics, those tend to, if they're too much alike, people get kind of weird.
Right.
They tend to gets gratey a little bit on each other, particularly when they're both sort of up, like, you know, super hyper, super anxious, super, or super depressed, whatever it is. If it's an excess quality and it's in both people, that's going to be a problem.
You said something so beautiful about both people just being your genuine, authentic selves and finding someone else who's doing that. Do you find that as a, because I mean, with comedy, that's the biggest advice you give. It's the hardest thing people have to overcome getting into comedy is being themselves. They just kind of sound like a caricature of usually like an 80s Andrew Dice Clay type.
Right.
Do you find that just on a personal level, people are oftentimes having a really hard time being themselves? Like being the, they're scared.
They aren't themselves yet. You know what I mean?
Right.
They haven't developed into themselves yet. They aren't. I personally, it took me a long time to figure that shit out. Is it because you didn't know
you were afraid to, you were trying to
I wasn't integrated with my feelings. And so for me to have spontaneous expressions of who I am, couldn't do that because feelings were too distant. I couldn't kind of connect with them. And, you know, spontaneous primary affects are a key component of who we are, and they are expressed, you know, they have to be able to kind of, in a regulated way, kind of come forward. And it's hard to do. It sounds easy.
It certainly does not. Like, how do you start to figure out who you are? Because if we combine this with something else we either talked about today or on your show, which is, I think we actually talked about this on your show, which is, you know, a lot of times when you do end up meeting someone with those same red flags or with those same whatever, your body's actually telling you, oh, this is what we love, baby.
Yes,
or when you think about going back to a bad habit, I'm going to go to Sonic. You go, oh, you got that excited, like addict feeling. Yeah. So figuring out who you are, it definitely has to do with listening to your intuition and your heart and doing work. Yep. But also sometimes the voice sounds like the bad things that you're used to from trauma or addiction or whatever. So how the fuck do you figure out who you are, but on the healthy path, instead of just falling into these bad habits, which your body is also saying?
So I would argue there are various ways of doing that, but fundamentally what happens is you start regulating your emotions and your drives better. They're not so overwhelming.
Yes.
And as you regulate them alongside of that, sort of, you start making choices that start to define yourself more fully. I guess that'd be about the way I describe it. You start to be willing to do things, able to do things. Like for me, I found like I never could have done all this stuff in media if I hadn't had therapy. I couldn't have done it. It would have been too weird for me. I would have been, I was such a perfectionist. I had to be the best doctor, the perfect doctor all the time. Perfect, perfect, perfect. And if this took away from that, I don't know. I'd drive myself crazy, I think.
Yeah.
But because I had somebody in my corner, I was regulating. I had some spontaneous sort of instincts on it. I was able to just do it.
Right.
And it's, I don't know. It's a funny process.
The idea of you being like on your mom's house and someone calling in and being like, when I fart, it sounds like a song. And you're just like, this has to be perfect. Don't fuck this up.
Well, it's not perfect. That I was more like, you know, So back in the Loveline days, you know, I was practicing 12, 14 hours a day. I mean, it just laid myself out for people for decades.
No way.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's when I started watching you. So what do you mean practicing? Like just obsessively like?
No. It's called practicing medicine. So I'd get up.
Got it. Sorry. I think I meant like practicing for Loveline 14 hours a day.
No. I'd get up at 5 a.m. I would do ICU rounds. Then I would do hospital rounds. Then I would see medical outpatients for 4 to 6 hours. Then I would go to the psychiatric hospital and do all the psych patients. And this was every day.
That's insane. And then you would do Loveline.
And then at night I'd go out and do Loveline. So Loveline actually forced me to come home for dinner. Because before I was not even coming home for dinner.
Holy shit.
And it was years and years and years and years where that was me. And that was my identity. And it was, again, because of therapy, I could calm that shit down.
And it's easier to listen to the good voices when you're not being so reactionary, which that's been, you know, a big thing that's changed with me. It's when you're reactionary, it's you're far more likely to make the bad decision because you are going for that sort of like instant gratification instead of looking at the larger picture.
Right. This is the phenomenon of thinking things all the way through.
Right.
Right. When you have compulsive stuff, that's an important thing to be able to do.
When you were working all of that time, you know, there's something I've talked to so many people from pastors to comedians, literally. The the workaholic brain or the addict brain, it's so many times people will tell me the right thing, which is moderation, right? Should I be celibate or should I do this? Can I have like a casual drink at a show, you know, or whatever? And to me, and I was always just like, what fucking magic world do you live in where moderation is an option, right? And not only that, but to a lot of people in our field, in a lot of fields, that addict behavior, that's why I'm an excellent guitar player. That's why I'm an excellent jujitsu fighter. That's why I'm good at comedy.
No, that's right.
So again, it's so hard to tell yourself. So when I want to get healthy, you know, and I just go, all right, well, I'm just going to stop drinking and I'm going to be celibate and I'm going to completely change my diet. Like I'm completely setting myself up for failure, but also in my head, that's how I get good at things. Where if I just slowly go, you know, cut out a little bit of carbs, it's like that just doesn't fucking mean anything to me.
Yeah, it depends on the person and the, you know, the nature of the compulsivity and that kind of thing, whether you've lost control or not, or whether you tend to have a tendency to lose control. There's not one answer to that. Okay. Yeah. Now, if you're having consequences, if you have a biological background of alcoholism or addiction and you're having consequences from behavior and substances, the probability is you're not gonna be able to moderate. Right. The probability is now some people still can, and they haven't sort of lost control yet. They're still not gonna be their best self, but I don't like telling people how to live. Also, I also don't like looking at anything as strictly pejorative. In other words, you mentioned obsessive compulsiveness and stuff. But I have that too. That's part of my anxiety disorder. Super asset, crazy asset,
right?
For practicing medicine, because I checked and double checked and torment myself with, you know, staying on top of things. Very, very useful practicing medicine. As far as my anxiety disorder goes, it's fucked. It's a mess.
Yeah.
But the quality of that disorder is not purely problematic. It has assets and liabilities. And that's true of everything in human behavior.
Dr. Drew, not only did I not know I was a love addict until this episode, but you just very casually, after I listed a thing I do, you were like, you just mentioned OCD. And I was like, I did? Ah, fuck, I have that too. No idea. I guess that is what that is. Yeah, I like what you said, though. This is really good for people listening, where it's like, if there are consequences. Because for me, it's more of a perfectionist, maybe, like OCD thing, because I have not, I mean, in 8 years, I've not had consequences from sex. I don't think I've had consequences from porn. I haven't had consequences from drinking.
Think that through.
Well, so are there are
the, if you really took a good look at it, you might feel a little, you might answer those questions a little differently.
Well, I guess you're right. I'm thinking of like rock bottoms, right?
Right.
Whereas what I was going to say is the reason I've wanted to take these off the table is because they've made me in some way or another not feel good about myself.
That's a consequence.
That's a consequence. Okay. So, right. So those are the consequences, because even, and I'm not and even
I'm
talking.
I'm guessing some of what made you not feel good about yourself also were consequences.
Yeah. And I, you know, I'm trying to think if it was, because what a lot of people say is they say, I'm just being too hard on myself, because I don't even mean like a slight.
You are hard on yourself. You are.
Okay. Because that's what I'm trying to figure out.
Too hard. I don't know. You are hard on yourself.
Yeah. Which again is good. In a way.
I agree. I think, you know, I have like low self-esteem, and that's the greatest asset I know of, because it always makes me double check everything, blame myself for everything.
Yeah.
Try to be better, try to improve things. I don't blame anybody else for anything. I take responsibility first. And that's just the orientation I have. And that's an asset that helps me grow and do better.
That's so funny. Yeah. Me and you are both doing like Jocko's extreme ownership, but not because we're tough Navy SEALs, just because we hate ourselves.
Low self-esteem.
Damn it, Jocko.
We could be better.
All right. Well, let me get to some listener questions so I can like stop sweating before I realize I have like more.
Good job. All good.
So many issues. Okay. So we call this our AA segment, our audience advice segment. This question me and you kind of talked about this on your show. This is from Natalie over at Patreon. Guys, if you want special questions and privileges, pay for it. It's America. You can go to patreon.com/Jamie Kilstein. Natalie asked me, she goes, okay, so CBT, so this is specific to types of therapy for her. She said that CBT therapy hasn't really been helpful for her. And she goes, I wonder if there's another style or type of therapy that's not as consistently intense as EMDR. Because she told me EMDR really helped her, but it's just like to do that forever seems like a bit of a nightmare.
Yeah, EMDR, people can feel really, oof, it can really be provocative. So it's what she would like is exactly a kind of version of what you and I have been talking about this whole show, which is something that's sort of generally called emotionally focused therapy.
Okay.
There's various versions of it. There's, you know, a relational, it's relational psychodynamics, it's emotionally focused, it's relational psychoanalysis. All these things kind of have similar kinds of quality to them, but I think the sort of the more easily available therapies would be called EFT or emotionally focused therapy.
Okay, cool. Awesome. Thank you. Now this question, this is actually from a friend of mine. You should have her on the podcast. She's in Austin. Her name is Jen Fulweiler. And she is one of those people you look at and you go, you don't have any problems. She has like 100,000 followers. Comedian? What's that? Comedian. Comedian, best-selling author. Before we became friends, I literally just saw mother of six, best-selling author, Catholic, and I'm like, this is who. And yeah, we're both just totally fucked up. We're trauma bonding, but because of that, she is like my new best friend, and she's great. You should check it. She's fucking hilarious. But she had a great question. It sounds like
First of all, I love that you have a female best friend. That's a very good sign.
This is good, right? Most of my like really super close friends right now are female, and I finally have like male masculine like mentors.
Oh, good. Good.
So
that's really, that may be more important than anything. I got a feeling.
Oh, good.
That's where you'll get to build that closeness stuff that have tender feelings towards you.
Okay, cool. I'm not going to go to those meetings
anymore.
Don't
turn into anything sexual, whatever, hopefully.
Yeah, no. Okay.
Yeah. So Jen.
She said, I would love to know how he avoids self-sabotage and stays true to himself even when haters come after him. So I thought those were two separate questions, but I asked her about it. And this is really cool because I deal with this too, where she kind of meant it as one where, okay, so you're dealing with the haters, but then you're also not letting them affect you. And affecting the decisions that you're making, therefore self-sabotage and staying true to yourself.
I see. So I am no expert in this. I hate the hater. You know, I hate that shit as much as anybody does. It's the way we're wired up as humans, particularly those with low self-esteem, we could have 12 great comments and one shitty one. We will obsess about the shitty one. That's how humans are wired. That's how particularly, you know, OCD people, low self-esteem people, you know, Jamie and I.
I've made a New Year's resolution to start actually reading those comments. And I did not realize that the second I see it's good, I scroll to make sure there's nothing bad. I barely read it. And I started actually focusing on them. And I'm like, oh, this is a person who's telling me I saved their fucking life. And I literally was like, oh, it's good. Okay, bye. And then psycho writes me some like horrible thing. And I'm like, oh boy.
And that's our codependency. We define ourselves by other people and their feelings about us and stuff. That's part of the codependency. And so when they have bad feelings, we immediately feel that we're bad. So move past it, obviously.
Yeah.
I just learned to kind of toughen up on that stuff. I can remember back in like 1997, Adam and I wrote a book.
Okay.
And that was the very beginning of Amazon reviews.
Oh no.
Three people's Amazon. and when they would say shit that they had no business saying about me or my knowledge base. And I would become outraged and, yes, and upset and furious with every one of them. I couldn't, like, couldn't read them all. Like, you've got to be, what, how can somebody say this? It's like,
yeah,
it's so disturbing to me. And so from there, I have improved quite a bit. Yep. I philosophically have just realized it comes with the territory now.
Yeah.
If you're not taking shit or in a shit storm, you don't exist. It's just the way it is.
Well, you're probably not doing anything interesting either.
Right. That's exactly right. And I have found, interestingly, that if you just keep the sails up and your compass straight, you'll be surprised how many people come around later and apologize for some of the shit they said.
That's happened to me already.
Which I find extraordinary.
Extraordinary. It's wild, yeah.
So I've got a little faith built off of that. So
that's cool.
You know, it's faith that your compass is due north, faith that the wind is going to continue blowing in your sails, faith that you're making good choices and, you know, you're sort of doing the right thing. And you've got to just kind of launch, kind of, you know, leap of faith.
Yeah. Does the self-sabotage
forward? The more you feel confident too. You know what I mean? The more you successfully move forward, the more you realize that this was just some bullshit. It doesn't really matter.
I've noticed that is as things keep happening for me, and you know, because when you're getting shit on and you're flailing already,
yeah,
it's just like, man, these people want me to fucking kill myself. But when there's actually light at the end of the tunnel, you can kind of actually start to feel bad for the people a little bit.
Yes.
Pray for them, hope for them, or I mean, not even you can take the Jesus approach and pray for them, or you can take just the fuck you approach and be like, man, that dude's fucking miserable. Either one.
Well, but we have not mentioned prayer or anything like that, or any, but prayer for people, that's a very strong move.
It's powerful.
Yeah.
And because, you know, I've started doing it. I have never said that publicly, but I've started doing it, and
it's a strong move. I like that.
Well, and it makes you feel, one, when you're praying for someone, you really do have to be empathetic, right? And you have to
put your own shit aside.
You have to put your own shit aside. And you're not praying for them to stop bothering you. You're praying for someone who is just fucking going at you to find happiness.
Yeah.
And like, they probably still won't like me, but
you've taught me a practice today, because I find myself often going, what would make somebody sit down and do that? What is wrong with them? And I should be saying, oh my gosh, I need to pray for that person's soul.
Yeah. Oh, that's really cool. Yeah, that's awesome. That actually made my day. That especially because I'm a little baby Christian, so I'm like so nervous to mention words like prayer and stuff.
And prayer does not have to be religious at all.
It can just be like you're focusing. I mean, Buddhism, right? Like a loving kindness meditation. They talk about loving kindness, and part of a lot of the loving kindness meditations is you think about someone who has wronged you.
Okay, so you and I are drifting. Powerful. We're drifting into the spiritual now, right? Which has been very empty in this country, and
people
need more of it than they get. And whatever that is for a given individual, whether it's prayer or faith or whatever, I mean, the word faith, prayer, and gratitude have come up in our conversation a lot in the last 10 minutes. And that's more in the spiritual domain. So
yeah, and what's interesting is, you know, when I was, I mean, classified as an atheist, I would say I was always agnostic. Mm-hmm. One of the big talking points in the atheist community is if you need a God to tell you to not murder someone or to be a bad or not to be a bad person, then like you're a shitty person. And I do agree that if I'm just doing stuff because I don't want to go to a place called hell, or because I want to be like, God, look at me and go to heaven. All right. Those motives are flawed. But ever since I have become spiritual and now, you know, Christian, there is something different where it's these little things like today I was jogging and I went past a dude and he was older and he had his hands on his knees. And not that I would ever have gone, fuck that guy. But I would have been like, oh, he's fine. He's resting or whatever. And then I was like, nope. And like turned around and was like, hey, dude, you okay? And he was, you know, he was struggling and he was okay, but he thanked me. And that's the kind of shit I want to do all day. And that honestly, like, I consider myself a good person pre-Jesus. I wouldn't have fucking stopped. You know, there are times that spirituality, it pushes you to that kind of next level.
That's all the stuff of the lived experience that's going to get you where you want to go.
Yeah.
It is. I'm telling you.
It's, man, Well, I appreciate you so much. I hope we get to see each other again soon. I want to give you a hug. I legitimately, like, this has been such
let
a
me,
cool...
I want to come, you know, I'm out there every month and a half, so I'm going to come see you perform somewhere. Let me know where
you're. Oh, yeah, that would be great. It'll explain a lot of...
I can't wait.
What is that? It's like a less filtered version of this. And then you can be the dude in the crowd that's like, I got him to go to meetings, and everybody be like,
No, whenever you mention me, I'll just be like slow clap.
Well, man, thank you so much. I'll shoot you a line when this goes out. I'm gonna text you after I do Adams on Thursday. I'm so excited about that.
Right.
All right, brother.
Get into the same stuff with him. He'll love it.
Yeah.
Well, he likes it's gonna be a little different. He doesn't like but focus it a little bit on him and and about, you know, how much we're off the rails these days.
I think there's a large, it's not the popular thing yet to not be totally on one side or the other, I truly think, I hope for my career's sake, that we're all sort of on the forefront of people being so sick of this tribalism stuff, so sick of being spiritually empty.
I do think it's happening. I've been Adam sort of is good at predicting the future. And for 3 years, I've been asking, like, when's this going to end? When's this going to end? You know, and he kept going, it's going to end. I don't know, but it's going to turn around. I kept going, when? I can't stand it.
I know.
Lately, I've stopped asking him because I can feel the turn. So,
yeah, no. Well, and I also think, like, this is one of the reasons I appreciate your friendship and also just willingness to help. I think the more people who are doing it get together, especially people with platforms, and we do lift each other up instead of just fuck. I know if I just retweet this divisive of bullshit, it'll, you know, get me some new followers. That's going to be key. Where we're all kind of in this together, and I think we can lead the way for other people and comedians and stuff who are maybe still profiting off of the divisive shit.
With me, one of the things going to stay with me today was you circling back to help the guy who is struggling. That's meaningful. That's different. That's happening. It's something
that makes my day, man.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. All right, man. Well, hopefully I see you soon.
Great to see you.
Thank you, brother. Man. Bye.
Bye.
Okay, I'm gonna be honest. Well, thanks to Dr. Drew. Again, check out Dr. Drew After Dark on on your mom's house. I'm going to be honest, guys. Like, the sex and love addiction, okay. I guess we all saw that coming. Did I also think I had undiagnosed OCD? I mean, no. No, that was new. I was literally, before, I was like, let's get to audience questions. Fucking sweating. Anyway, guys, thank you for listening to the show. Thank you to, once again, our sponsor, Logcast. Thank you to Big Laugh Comedy. If you are new to this show, stick around, man. We got a community of fucking misfits who are just trying to better ourselves every fucking day together with no judgment. You guys hear it. Your fearless leader is a mess. But I'm trying, and that's all that matters. You know, sometimes you just need to be around a bunch of people who are fucking trying and loving each other in the process, flaws and all. So welcome to the show. If you're new, stick around. You can subscribe. You can watch the video, the full video of me and Dr. Drew on YouTube. Subscribe to the YouTube channel, youtube.com/Jamie Kilstein. You can get your own questions answered, again, by downloading the Logcast app for free in the Apple Store. Go to the Jamie Kilstein Circle. Leave a voice memo for us. We'll play it on the air. If you want to support me and what I do and my videos that I make on Instagram, you can go to patreon.com/Jamie Kilstein. Again, even $5 a month helps. But the most important thing you can do is tell a friend about this show. Send the friend to a show. Send clips. You can come see me live. I'm doing stand-up in Hawaii on Kauai, Oahu, and Maui. I'm doing stand-up in February. Those dates are now up at jamiekilstein.com/tour. And a bunch of other dates are coming very soon. So check that out as well. And follow me on social media at the Jamie Kilstein on Instagram and at Jamie Kilstein on Twitter. All right. I love you guys. Thank you again, Dr. Drew. I have a lot to think about, everybody. See you next week. Aloha, y'all. Peace.